page turns the word Chinese into a verb and acts as a kind of meta-commentary or summary, displaying as aphorism what the poem is doing. It retells the collision and collusion which is the poem. Within the block spaces, Chinese characters meet the comic strip. Just note in passing, the third poem that you have is, in terms of shape and reference as well, is based on Brancusi's bird sculptures and makes reference and uses that as its fundamental form. The second poem I'll talk principally about is the fourth, the one with the English letter Q in the middle of the page. The multidirectional play of the character is even more thoroughly in display in the fourth poem, titled Sign, Imagination Triggered by a Letter. The field of the page, dominated by the large Q and its wagging or penetrating tail, the word sign itself, with its time-bound present Western resonances of the post-structural thinking of the past 25 years, also carries with it, in the character Fu, a reference to a ritualized drawing of figures, another version of the scene of writing, drawn by Taoist priests to invoke or expel spirits. Again, what may be Che's signature, and I refer here to the personal in the same way that John Cage's erasure of the personal has to it a residue, which is nonetheless personal and idiosyncratic, is the humor, the playfulness, the meaningfulness that joyously refuses containment, a delight in the excesses of signification, a kind of Bataille-like enthusiasm. The Q itself may suggest the writing of Che's own last name in English, though we must also note that his name in Chinese and in English is made up, a name he has given himself, the name of a common herb. The shape of the poem and Che's subsequent declarations on roundness, circularity, world outlook, which run throughout the poem, suggest a world process, an enactment and embodiment of a fundamental human making, a human construction of signification done on this global, circular, philosophical ground. The deed of meaning-making is a kind of intercourse of sperm fertilizing egg, a deed of will and force, a fulcrum applied, but also known, as Che comments in the poem, as eventually overstretched. The cue, the poem, any shape, becomes many things, exceeds the control of its maker, becomes inevitably and pleasantly more than any one thing. Hence, and if you start looking at the shapes, I'll kind of be reading this next to the last line, you see a little concave object there. Hence, concave, and as an aside, I would say in that shape, Ezra is readable, though I suppose it could also be a small sandcastle. Next description is a red labyrinth, inevitably a part of the context of current, quote, red history. Finally, a sea anemone, thus rhyming with Charles Bernstein's Meditations on Absorption. And in the middle of all this is the acknowledgement of will in the foreign word pry in the middle of the poem. That word visually plays off of the multivalent sacred word Tao, path, way, law, or principle. And the overall poem itself can be said to be a deed of Tao, an embodiment of the Tao, a Taoist poem by a poet who lives near and visits regularly Hanshan's temple. In the fifth poem, which is presented to you in the shape kind of a curtain, in the fifth poem, the title is An Antique-Style Door Curtain. And it must be obvious by now that form and content are inseparable in Che's five-poem sequence. And you may also be curious to know that Che is, in addition, an accomplished visual artist. Again, the conflation of the ancient and postmodern announces itself. And perhaps that is the originality of Che's work and that of the original poets. Hence, the mechanical and authoritarian nature of order-making and the number sequences that you read Chinese or in the English that you have before you. The number sequences come from calisthenics, the way we repeat an exercise and count off the number completed. 1, 2, 3, 4, 2, 2, 3, 4, 3, 3, 3, 4, 4, 3, 4, 2, 3, 4. Frames an inner column of a decidedly more poetic nature. The off-rhyme visually of the overall poem is with the ancient vertical scroll writing, but also with a decorative art of a room divider or door curtain, a mode of decoration temporarily popular in the American culture of the 60s with beaded curtains hanging from doorways. The middle three columns of Chiz's poems offer three different views, and let me read you a rough translation of those three columns. The first column repeats a phrase that would go like this. It looks like rain, 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 it looks like rain. Okay. The middle column, which is the one I refer to as the most, quote, poetic, would go something like this. Suddenly, a gust of spring wind lifts up my face, skin lifts you up as if you are a target made of empty eggshell. And the third column says, I stand in front of a door curtain looking at a group of first grade students doing their military drills on the playground. And the three columns are phrased by the numbers I've pointed out to you. So the middle three columns offer three different views. The words, characters are raining down like raindrops, a more traditionally poetic sentiment, the lyricized moment of attention, which deflates with a sense of the self as a target, which may also be fundamentally empty. And the third column suggests a flat moment of observation, perhaps the poem's genesis, in which the young students are being trained and are submitting to the drills and numbers that will keep them in place, that will give them form, that will eventually mark and number them. And thus the rather bleak sense of selves, the bottom line translates roughly one long line of ants, another long line of ants, and another long line of ants. And thus the rather bleak sense of selves and characters and raindrops and bead curtains as a long line of ants, a perspective that perhaps only the sociobiologist E.O. Wilson, with his in-depth understanding of the social world of ants, could rescue from our perhaps too easy typology of dreaded sameness. In conclusion, what we're trying to do here is introduce a different branch of innovation within contemporary Chinese poetry to link up with Yunta's initial remarks as part of this panel. Part of what's at issue, I think, is the way in which, for American audiences, perhaps a variety or a mode of Chinese poetry is fit within a particular political narrative with which we may have a certain thematic comfort, and that variety of poetry becomes what we know as the whole of contemporary Chinese poetry. Personally, I see Chechianzo's work, Beidou's work, and others as suggesting a much greater range of experimentation and variety in contemporary Chinese poetry. Again, I would like to end by thanking Beidou for his reading tonight and giving us a firsthand example of that work. Thank you.